Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
With the first Jewel claim.
Oh, it's a photo of the Derby! Miss McMahon!
The race for the Triple Crown erupts into an epic party. The Preakness Stakes, May 18th on NBC and Peacock.
That was just awesome. I watched that over and over again when I saw that last night on social media. I had missed it Monday night. Marv Levy, coach of the Bills teams that went to the Super Bowl four straight times, getting everybody riled up in advance of Monday night's 41-7 win over the Titans. They may have to have him do that before every home game this year because it worked pretty well, Christopher, to start the season for the Bills. We start this Wednesday edition of PFT Live. Presented by Google Pixel, and I say good morning and hello to my co-host.
Oh, hello.
In crime and profanity, Chris Sims.
Hello, Michael Florio. How are you today? Yeah, that was pretty awesome. It really was. I mean, that's still a special team. You know, I feel like too many times, like where great teams of the past, that even though they didn't win Super Bowls or, you know, have a mark on the history of the NFL, maybe the way we would all like as fans, we don't appreciate that. Marv Levy's one of those guys. You know, Dan Reeves is another guy we brought up before, but I do appreciate the Bills and their fan base and the way they treat him, Jim Kelly, everything. Those were special teams. It was a special era, and we haven't seen anybody come close to doing what they did there. That was four in a row. That's crazy, and just really when you think about it.
To have the ultimate sports disappointment,
yeah,
and to go back to 0-0 and do it again three times,
yes,
after you lose in heartbreaking
fashion
with the Scott Norwood miss against your dad's New York Giants.
I was there. Yeah, that was crazy.
Back again, back again, back again. Unbelievable. And maybe after years of frustration and anticipation, this is the years that the Bills can get it done. Marv Levy, by the way, I sent it to my son last night, and he did some research, and he was stunned to learn that Marv Levy is 97 years old.
97?
Older than Bud Grant.
Wow.
We've been amazed and impressed by Bud Grant
right.
and his longevity
right.
and the fact that he continues to have all of his faculties and is just amazing to listen to. Marv Levy, older than Bud Grant.
Wow. Who says, you know, stress kills you? I don't know. Maybe we all need to become football coaches. That's really amazing. That is, I did not know he was that old. But as you started to say it, I started to go, wait, he's got to be really damn old because he was pretty damn old when they were going to four Super Bowls. Like, you know, right? You're like, I started to go back and go, I feel like he was the oldest coach in football back then. So it does make sense once you start to put it together there.
He returned at one point as the general manager of the Bills. Remember that?
I do remember that.
For a brief period of time,
yeah.
He was the GM, kind of like the Bill Walsh move, came back to be the GM of the 49ers after he was coaching. But Marv Levy, 97. I often have the existential thought that maybe it's not worth being around after the age of 80. A lot of stuff starts to go haywire
after the age of 80. I hear you.
Right? But Marv Levy and Bud Grant proving that maybe that theory needs to be revisited. Maybe that there is still a lot to do and a lot to contribute.
Yeah.
And Marv Levy's still going strong. But it really was great to see. And it's great to see what the Bills are doing. Look, we're going to play some of my interview from yesterday with Bills receiver Stephon Diggs. It's hard not to root for the Bills. And I know that makes it it's the kind of thing that is so frustrating to the other teams in their division that are competing with them, Patriots fans, Dolphins fans, even Jets fans. Jets 1-1, by the way. We're hearing about the Bills again. More about the Bills. The Bills, the Bills, the Bills. Stop talking about the Bills. Sorry, this is just one of those years where there's already that aura, and let's see what the Bills can do. But, the other three teams in the division all have a trophy.
Right.
The Dolphins have two, the Jets have one, the Patriots have six, the Bills have zero. So maybe this is just one year where the Bills can get theirs and then the Patriots or whoever else can rise up. But it just feels like it's so long overdue. And this is coming from the perspective of a kid who grew up in the 70s waiting for the Vikings to win one.
Yeah, no,
at
I
some
know,
level,
right.
At some level, I should want the Vikings to get to the top of the mountain first, but it ain't happening with my good friend number 8 at quarterback, so I'll go ahead and defer to number 17.
He loves him not today, but yeah, I'm with you there with the Bills. It is hard. I don't know, you know, what you know, there's nothing not to like. They seem to play the right way. They're exciting. They're humble about it. And you know, when they do win, when they lose a heartbreaker, they don't make excuses or anything like that. You know, we know the fan base is starved up there. It's arguably one of the most rabid fan bases in football. We, you know, in L.A., Mike, I don't even think we really talked about this. When we went and saw, Rams-Bills to open, I really, when we were around the city that few days before the game, it was like, wait, is this the Super Bowl? Is this stadium going to be half and half? It wasn't that, but the Bills Mafia was very present. So, they're due to get theirs. And they have a guy that's arguably the best quarterback in football, and he's, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of people are seeing that now, too, and he's fun to watch. So I think that adds to it, too, and it adds to us talking about it a lot more.
We'll focus a little more on the Bills next segment. By the way, the return of After Further Review is coming up later in the program. By popular demand, Actually, we had forgotten all about it, and somebody asked me the other day, hey, are you going to do that segment from last year that was really informative and instructive? It's like, I'd forgotten all about it. That's how riveting and necessary it felt to me. But now that it's back and we have a list of plays we're going to discuss, and this isn't to say officials bad. This is just to help people better understand the rules and look at some of these closer calls. Things are happening quickly in real time, and we're just trying to help and support and educate everyone out there. The show, by the way, PFT Live, once again, presented by Google Pixel, Peacock, Sirius XM 85, Sky Sports NFL, live on Sky, this is a tightrope for me. We love the folks in the UK and Ireland who enjoy the show, but we also love the folks in the US and anywhere else in the world. We don't want to pick and choose. We don't want to play favorites. We love all of our children.
Except New York and L.A. Mike's never going back there. He likes all the people in this country except in New York and L.A. The hell with those people.
I am kind of going back to New York this weekend, although I'm not going to Manhattan. I'm going to the airport in LaGuardia.
Oh, well, there's a burger that I heard's real good there. You should pick it up.
we have had some invitations for you to eat a burger off the floor at Heathrow Airport.
I did. I saw that. I saw those tweets. I did, yeah. So
they
I'll
may just all show
day.
Up. They may all show up with burgers and just drop them on the ground and tell you bon appetit.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, no thank you. I won't be doing that ever again.
Steelers fans have to feel like they ate a burger off the ground on Sunday watching their Steelers offense against the New England Patriots defense. It's still a game the Steelers could have won, but you got to muster something offensively. Here's Mike Tomlin, whose team has to turn it around pretty quickly for Thursday night's game against the Browns, on whether he's happy with the offensive play calling from coordinator Matt Canada.
I'm not happy with much of anything, man, when we just lost a game. But I'm also experienced enough to see the big picture that we are still very much in development. And so I'm going to exercise appropriate patience and continue to teach and ask the guys to continue to learn in an effort to continue to push this train down the track and get better. I think that if anyone is sitting here on Monday in week two of this thing feeling happy, They're probably wrong or misinformed.
You know, I was fascinated by what he has on his neck. At first, I thought it was a pen because I love the move of having a pen on a cord because then you never have to go looking for a pen. It just looks like one of those things where it's like a lanyard thing, but there's nothing there. There's nothing. It's not hooked to anything.
Well, there must be something like, on the bottom. Are we missing it there? Maybe it's just
Looks like it's just a snap. It looks like it's a hook. There's nothing there. I was mesmerized by that because I'm thinking, I really do like the idea of wearing a pen around your neck. I'm going to start doing that, I think. Not just as a fashion statement, but so I always have a pen.
It might be.
I don't know.
The more we watch, it's a whistle, too.
Oh,
that's
it a
what
whistle?
I think there you can see the little black part of the whistle at the very bottom below those silver pieces, but it didn't show up at all.
First, I thought it was a pen. Then I thought it was just something that was just a clasp with nothing on.
Well, I was
so you're
to
ready
think...
to put a pen, a whistle. I don't know.
I know, or it's like a pass with his name and face on it, just in case they didn't know who
but
he was.
But it's not
in the
there.
Steelers facility.
Yeah, but he took it off because it's like they don't need to know who I am. I don't need a credential to get into.
Still a
this
coach,
building.
Man.
I've
he needs
been
his whistle.
Coming here since 2007. Okay, so. Look, he said he wants to exercise patience with Mitchell Trubisky. We'll hear from him in a moment. How much patience can you have when they are chanting Kenny, Kenny, Kenny in the stadium? Tomlin said that he didn't hear it because he's doing other things. At some point, you've got to hear it. The sound makes its way down to the field. How much patience do you think Mike Tomlin's going to have with Trubisky?
I think it'll be, you know, I don't think it's going to be a rush to judgment here. He's never been one to be like that. That's the one thing I do respect about Mike Tomlin, realizing, hey, it's a long season. Things aren't always perfect early in the year. You know, everybody's trying to find their footing. You know, teams don't get to play a lot in the preseason anymore like we talk about so often. You know, you don't know what to expect from the teams you're playing a little bit, so you're still gathering information there. So I think it's still, like he said, in a growing process. Is it disappointing? Yes, it is. You know, we brought up a lot of concerns in the preseason and lead up to week one about their football team and the thing that concerned us. You know, I'll stand by what I said a little bit on Sunday Night Football. I think you heard what I said, Mike. You know, I don't sit there and watch the game and go, oh, man, there's plays everywhere and Mitchell Trubisky's missing them. Gosh, he's got to go. It's his fault. I don't. I see an offense that has no rhythm to it. You know, every time I do see a pass down or anything significant, it's always a one-on-one shot down the sideline. So I don't see a whole lot of imagination there. And then I think you couple that, Mike, with like what we talk about a ton here is their offensive line. It ain't worth a damn. It's not worth a damn. And we've seen in 2 weeks they can't open holes for a guy that's very talented in Najee Harris. And so I think that plays into it. And here's the third thing, Mike, that I think also plays into it. Also knowing Mitchell Trubisky been around the block, he's got a defensive head coach. He's probably preaching, hey, we got a pretty good defense. Don't turn over. We can win these games kind of ugly. That can lead to ugly offense, too, from the offensive coordinator and the quarterback. So I think there's a few factors at play here before I want to judge it too harshly on Mitch Trubisky.
Meanwhile, Matt Canada spoke yesterday about the fact that Trubisky doesn't have the freedom to change the play
right
at the line of scrimmage.
Check
that's
to the 2 yard slant.
Well. Yeah. But there's got to be, well,
yeah, I hear you.
There's got to be some freedom. There's got to be some discretion to be exercised by the quarterback, or at a minimum, what we see other teams do, two plays called in the huddle.
Sure. Sure.
And the quarterback picks one based upon the look that he sees from the defense. At least that. It's not even that. He's got no discretion, no ability, no leeway to change the play at the line of scrimmage.
Well, I don't – this is where I didn't – I read this, but I didn't hear it. And I would like – I have a hard time. I think there's been plays where he stands up and they do a second play. I'll say that, Mike. But I don't think he can just go off script to what you're saying here. You know, I would be shocked. Every team in football is calling plays that, you know, not every play, but you have, you know, 10, 15, 20 plays a game where there's two plays called in the huddle. And, hey, if we get this look, we run the play we called in the huddle. You know, if we don't get this look, hey, check, 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 or kill, kill, kill. You hear the quarterback say can, whatever. And that means go to the other play. But I don't think he has the discretion to just go, hey, coach, you know, I kind of saw the Will linebacker and the free safety blitz, and I just decided to, you know, change the play altogether and max protect and, you know, throw an out route to Deontay Johnson there. Yeah, you got to earn that in the NFL. So that's where I think, you know, there's still in a process there. They're doing what kind of the coach calls in. I do think there's check with means as far as those two plays are concerned, but he doesn't have the Ben Roethlisberger ability to just go, oh, wait, I want to change the protection. Hey, you do this, you do this. And now, said Hutt, that's definitely not there yet.
He did say yesterday he'd like to get into a different play at the line of scrimmage from time to time, but he doesn't have that ability yet. Canada said we're evolving to that. After you have a guy who's played 18 years,
right,
like Roethlisberger,
right,
and a guy who just got here with a bunch of young players, we're building toward that. Let's hear more from Trubisky about the urgency and the importance of getting the ball down the field in that Steelers offense.
It's there, and we had our opportunities. I think earlier I can take shots downfield. I think I could look for a 14 more often. George, he's doing a great job for us, and I just got to get these playmakers the football, whether it's whatever route they're running. I just got to get them the ball. So it really comes down to me making better decisions, being aggressive, and putting ourselves in that position. I like to throw the ball down the field. Why I haven't, given the certain looks, especially early in the game, I can't tell you exactly why, but we're looking for that. I'm looking for that. I like to throw the ball down the field. I think every quarterback, like deep down in the heart, likes to throw the ball as far as they can down the football field and watch their playmakers go up and get it. So we're looking for that, and we got to look for the right opportunity, right timing. And it's just having that aggressive mindset and coming down with those plays. So we want to throw the ball down the yard, but we got to be smart about it, and it's all about completing it.
I perk up every time I hear someone's playmaker now. Product placement.
Playmaker.
Still available wherever your books are purchased, read, or whatever. But hey, Pickens, the rookie,
yeah,
that got so much buzz during training camp in the preseason, he made a comment earlier this week about he's running free 90% of the time. So we're starting to see a little frustration. They've got a ton of weapons, dare I say playmakers, on that offense. At some point, it's got to click. And if it's not going to click with Mitchell Trubisky, even if it all comes down to the offensive line, Chris, if it doesn't click with Trubisky, it's going to click potentially or not,
yeah,
with Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, we know the clock is ticking here. And if it continues to not look good, they will. I just don't think, you know, I don't think Mike Tomlin's the kind of guy that's going to do it after week three or week four if they're sitting there 2-2 or something like that. I don't think he's going to panic in that situation. You know, I didn't watch the Patriots film yet, so I can't really speak to people flying wide open. But, man, we have a lot of different, you know, TVs going on in our game, and I certainly was paying pretty close attention to that football game. I never got the sense watching replays that George Pickens was running open 90% of the time. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's a little more open than I thought, and if it is, I'll correct it. You know, the stinky part is, yeah, no run game. Okay, yes. Offense looks, you know, a little not creative, unimaginative, and it stinks because these three receivers are freaky. But I think what also comes into play here with the New England Patriots and the Cincinnati Bengals, they play teams like Pittsburgh and go, wait, they're not going to be able to run the ball on us. One of the only ways they're going to beat us is shots down the field with these receivers. And I think teams play, you know, coverages and the corners play off knowing that, wow, these are some special guys that can turn the game in one play. But yeah, they got to find a way to get them involved more. There's no question about that. I mean, when you go into a game against the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick starts to tell you that Chase Claypool's awesome and that even when he's covered, he's not covered, and it's like Gronk, he's telling you what kind of a special player he thinks he is. So I think that says something there too. But we've seen this the last few years where we've had the Ben checking the line of scrimmage thing, but too much of us talking about how come they can't get Claypool the ball enough? How come they can't get Deontay Johnson the ball enough? And that's where you start to go, wait, okay, I know the quarterbacks haven't been great, but maybe the OC and company there need to pick up their end of the bargain here as well.
And it is going to lead to frustration, not just outside the building, inside the building, among those receivers if they're not getting the football. And look, you know how it goes, Chris. Every receiver's running free 90%
exactly
of the time,
right,
if you ask it.
Right.
Right. But you got to get the ball. If you get the ball a few times during the game and you're able to go do your thing, you don't think about all the other times that you were open and you didn't get the
very
ball.
Very true.
It's a delicate balance. Even if you have Dan Marino as the quarterback of that team, it's a delicate balance between Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth, and Najee Harris, because there's still only one ball. that's where it becomes a challenge. But if you're not getting the ball to any of them sufficiently enough, it all runs the risk of imploding. And I can't help but wonder.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Belichick's comments last week about Claypool.
Uh-huh.
I can't help but wonder whether he's just trying to stir up some trouble a little bit.
All right.
Because we've heard flashes of things from Claypool. He said at one point in the offseason he's one of the best three receivers in the league. He's got a contract that's going to be due for renegotiation after this season. I don't think they can pay all these guys, especially if you can't get the ball to them. What the hell? You can't justify paying Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool and save some for George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth. You can't do it. I just wonder at some level whether there wasn't some deliberate impishness from Bill Belichick to just get Chase Claypool riled up a little bit and get him complaining a little bit more behind the scenes about his lack of involvement by creating the urgency. Hey, even Bill Belichick sees it.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Time. Yeah. He sees it,
yeah.
And these dumbasses can't get me the ball. I mean, I could see Claypool thinking that at some level.
Yeah, I hear you there. I mean, Bill is, of course, the most tactical person I think we've ever seen in football, so I wouldn't be surprised. The other thought that went through my head was just he's laying down the groundwork for the other part of the process that you talked about, right? Where it is could be the last year he's there in Pittsburgh, and he's buttering them up to go like, hey, I see how good you are here. Come here, right? We've seen Bill do that before too, so it could go either way in that discussion. But I think you know the point you make. These are some personalities here, and Claypool and Deontay Johnson, I think, are at a point in their career where if they don't, you know, Deontay Johnson might be a little bit more quiet about the situation because he got paid. But if it continues to look like this another few weeks down the road, you're going to start to hear these guys spout off or show frustration, and that is going to be an annoyance to the football team and the overall goal of what they're trying to accomplish.
The coach who has the ultimate blind spot when it comes to drafting and developing young receivers loves those Steelers receivers. He had Antonio Brown briefly.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't long enough to even register. And remember years ago when Emmanuel Sanders became a restricted free agent,
yeah, right.
They signed him to an offer sheet.
Yes.
And it was a one-year offer sheet. The thinking was, I remember somebody telling me, look, here's what they're doing. They're signing him to the offer sheet. It's 1 year. The Steelers match it. Then next year they'll sign him as a free agent. But they didn't. That's when he ended up in Denver by way of Kansas City the following year. But they wanted Emmanuel Sanders, and they got Antonio Brown, and it sounds like there's a little window shopping going on by Bill Belichick with Chase Claypool. And if they don't get Claypool more involved, Claypool at some point is going to notice that Bill's out there with his hoodie up, trying to be deliberately inconspicuous, and it's not working by design.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't doubt that. I don't. And Bill, you know, as much as we maybe talk about his eye or lack of eye for getting a receiver out of college, he knows when he sees him in the NFL how to get him and go, wait, this guy's good. He can be infused into our program, and it seems to work that way. You know, and let's not forget with the Steelers offense conversation too. They played two pretty good defenses. It's not like they were playing teams where we looked at it and said, well, they should just steamroll these teams. No, I mean, I never was in an illusion or state of an illusion to think that, oh, they're going to go up and down the field on the Bengals. And who did a good job, and the Bengals played good defense last week against the Cowboys once again. It's the offensive problem. And then, you know, the low-scoring game last week, I don't think that shocked either one of us. And when we did our picks pod last week and all that, I don't think that was shocking. It's a really good Patriots defense that has the ability to stop the run without having to put too many people in the box to stop it. They got enough big people. So that allows them to be safe on the back end and not let up the big play. And, of course, it's not going to be any easier tomorrow night either. We'll see. I think there's, you know, a lot of things in play here. To me, the biggest problem with the football team is the fact that, you know, Najee Harris is averaging 1-point-something yards per carry, basically. I know it's probably a little bit more than that. But, man, game one, game two, there's not a hole to speak of. Pass protection as well. Like, you know, talk about get the ball down the field. You playing quarterback for that football team can't have a state of mind to go, well, I'll hold the ball and let me pat the ball one more time and take another hitch step because that's going to come open. No, you do that, you're going to get your head torn off most likely. So there's a lot of things here, and I know we always want to talk about the quarterback, but I don't think it's time yet to start talking, you know, Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky. Not yet, at least.
I think we're getting there, though. I think
we are.
The next two games,
you,
Chris, are critical. Thursday night at Cleveland.
National TV.
Prime time.
Right, right.
national streaming, asterisk. Then, hey, look, until they fix that navigation, I'm sorry. YouTube TV and YouTube, by the way.
What navigation? What are you talking
Google.
About?
When you fast forward, okay.
Oh, that part of it. I saw
when,
you.
When you're trying right. to, yeah, and this is basic, and YouTube TV has it mastered. When you fast forward, if you pause for a commercial because you're 57 and you have to go pee,
yeah.
right? Sorry, but anybody out there who's 57 or older knows what I'm talking about, and Chris, you'll find out in time. You press pause, and then when you start going, it shows you a little box that shows that you're rocketing through the commercial, and or you can hit 15-second jump.
Yeah, I've got
15
you.
15-second, 15-second, it takes you back to the game. You're flying blind. You're flying on, what is it? What do they say? Without on instruments? That's, you're trying to land the plane on instruments. You can't see anything.
Yeah.
And you overshoot the runway.
Okay, okay.
It's you would
That's
think.
Annoying.
And I know that people out there get pissed at me when I say this, but I'm sorry. If you want to make this big to-do about the pivot to streaming, you got to have technology that is easy to use. You've got to have a way to let people get through the commercials and get back to the game if they have to go take a piss.
Yeah, well,
sorry.
I'm
sorry to get riled up about
it. It's annoying. I know. Well, you know, or you could just do like me, Mike. You know, you watch the game in the barn. I watch the game in the barn. I just kind of like open one of the sliding doors and pee in the grass, and then I just watch the game at the same time. I don't miss anything. I don't have to pause it. It's great.
And when your mom visits all these years later, she understands why there's a dead
patch
of grass.
Right. Yeah, mom. Yeah,
from
mom,
all the times you were peeing off the porch.
That's
when you were
right.
A kid.
It's old time's sake, mom. I'm trying to just keep the tradition alive here.
So, but really, back to the point. If there was one, the Browns and the Jets are the next two because Chris, it's funny. Schedules look a certain way before the season starts.
Uh-huh.
Then the season starts, and they look a little different. After Browns and Jets for week 3 and 4, how about this? At the Bills, Buccaneers, at the Dolphins,
yikes.
At the Eagles.
Yikes.
That has a much different vibe, Christopher, than it did before week 1.
Yeah, well, that has a vibe of you better get your, you know, .. ready here because you got some real challenges. And of course, tomorrow is going to be a real challenge. The Browns defense is good. You know, they're going to be a handful and probably a bad matchup with the Steelers in a lot of ways too, because we know how good the pass rusher is. It helps that Jadeveon Clowney is going to be out of the football game. But man, yes, I mean, you're speaking the truth. Bills, Bucks, Dolphins, Eagles, it doesn't get any harder than that. Bye week, Saints, and then Bengals. I mean, you're playing, to me, you know, 6 of the top 10 defenses in football as far as roster. There's scheme there. There's a little bit of everything. So, yeah, they better get their crap together here soon.
This could go off the rails very quickly for the Steelers, who have never had a losing record under Mike Tomlin, whose tenure dates all the way back to 2006.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Kevin, Pete Carroll has been the coach of the Seattle Seahawks since 2010. And they've got some weapons like the Steelers. Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
DK Metcalf. Here's Pete Carroll on basically, and I guess the way to put it would be to let Gene cook, because he's ready to let his new quarterback get the ball down the field in the passing game. Here's Pete Carroll from earlier in the week.
After 2 weeks of watching Geno play, we don't need to hold him back at all. I think Geno's got his game ready to go. We need to trust him, and we need to let him, you know, have maybe give him a few more opportunities and stuff. We've been pretty solidly conservative, counting on running the football. When we didn't run the football, then okay, we didn't have much of a mix that we needed. So we can do better with that. And you know, whether that's right or wrong, you know, that's not the point. The point is that we need to keep expanding. We have too many explosive avenues to go to, and we got to make sure that these guys show up.
I don't know if this is a way to put pressure on Geno Smith, because maybe Drew Lock can do it if Geno can't. And I think back to the things Pete Carroll said, Chris, before the season when they made Geno Smith the starter. It felt that it was intentionally temporary. The starter to start the season, the competition is continuing. And if they're pivoting the offense toward getting the ball down the field more, as they should with Metcalf and Lockett, maybe Lock is inching a little closer. Because even though they won in week one,
yeah,
their offense is not good.
No.
They're averaging 5.3 air yards per attempt. They have a league-low 56 rushing yards per game. Geno Smith was under 200 yards against the 49ers passing. They've got to do something, or it's going to go off the rails for them as quickly as it goes off the rails for the Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's you're right. They got to do something, but I don't. Again, I'm going to say just a little bit of what I said with Mitch Trubisky. I don't look at it and go, "It's a Geno issue all the time," either. You know, hey, this is another year we're talking about the same damn issue. You know, there's an issue with lack of imagination up there in Seattle as well. And then way too conservative of an approach. I mean, listen, we were all drooling and we were texting and everything because of the week one game where they came out throwing the football. We all almost fell off our chair going, what? What are they doing here? This is amazing. And then they ran out of tricks. But, like, yeah, to me, that's an issue. They need to open up the field. We know Pete Carroll wants to run the ball, right? But you got to open up the field, pass first, be a little aggressive, get the defense going back a little bit to help out your run game and, you know, be able to take a little pressure off of your O-line, which another, you know, situation a little like Pittsburgh here where, you know, the offensive line I don't think is anything good and it's nothing special right now in Seattle. So there's issues along that way too, but it's two games in a row where we go, well, I don't get it. They have a guy at receiver here that's got muscles popping out of his ears and he's as fast as anybody in the game. And they don't seem to find ways to get him the ball. And it's just too little too late. And last week, too, just was way too conservative early on in the football game. It is. And it's just hard to get going playing quarterback that way. You know, that's the thing I think people need to realize sometimes, too. You play in these type of offenses where it's conservative and run the football and all of that, just like Mitchell Trubisky, it's hard to play quarterback in that kind of offense. You never feel like you're in a rhythm. You know, I know we've used this analogy in the past. It's like even Steph Curry would like, hey, can I get a backdoor layup to get going a little bit or just a mid-range jumper before you start asking me to hit 30-footers? And that's where I feel like they do an injustice to their quarterbacks that way. So this is another one where, you know, Drew Lock's got talent. I know that. And Geno's not on solid ground. But Geno's not the guy I look at to be like the number one culprit here for the issue, at least for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I agree with you. Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, is a big part of it. I mean, he's been there for a couple of years now, and it's not like the offense has suddenly become a powerhouse attack. Pete Carroll, just because they beat the Broncos, isn't some sort of stone tablets etched by the hand of God validation that Pete Carroll was right. He could still be wrong. He could be wrong, and Russell Wilson could be wrong. They both could fail in this new adventure where Russ gets to cook in Denver and they can't even, you know, beat the clock to get a play called and Seattle can't get anything going either. It could be that the only way it worked for either of them is to be together. That would be the ultimate outcome here. If they both fail separately, they succeeded together and they may both fail separately and the Seahawks may be in the process of failing. It's still early, but when you hear this kind of stuff from Pete Carroll, you can tell there's some urgency there to get the offense going a little bit more than it has.
Yeah.
There should be.
Yeah, there should be. They have to. I don't think their defense is going to be good enough to where they're just going to be able to rely on, wait, we'll just run the ball a little and won't make mistakes to where our defense will pull through like this is 2013 or 2012 or 2014 or the good old days with the Legion of Boom. They got to help their defense out a little bit. You know, that to me would be the biggest thing. And yeah, even last week, the way the game started, it's like they tried to get the ball to the receivers early, but it was like, oh yeah, here's a little, you know, stay pass and a little short pass here just to say we got you the ball, right? And that's just not the way, that's not going to make people happy, nor is it going to scare defenses like the San Francisco 49ers or other defenses in football. You know, you got to come out with, hey, what have you drawn up in the lab during the week? Come out with a few plays that strike some fear into the defense, and you watch your offense, and now the short passes all open up, and you go, whoa, we just threw a ball into the flat for 4 yards, but the team's so scared of our down-the-field threat and what we've done earlier, he turned up and got 12 more yards on that. You know, it's all so confined with them at times, and that's what was so enjoyable about the week one first half performance. They got to find more ways to do stuff like that. I think it'll help out their whole football team, and it eventually will allow them to play the style they want to play as the offensive line comes along and gets better at running the football and everything else that comes with that.
DK Metcalf, all that money they paid him, and he deserved it.
Yes.
36 receiving yards week one on 7 catches. 4 catches for 35 receiving yards in week two. That's 71 total yards. You saw the number on the screen earlier, but it's just amazing to see the breakdown. 36 and 35 for a guy that is in the mid-$20 million per year, a guy they had to keep. And I know there was some discussion there.
Yeah, about trading, you know, rebuilding.
Are we tearing it down?
Right.
Are we rebuilding or reloading? What are we doing here? And I think Pete Carroll didn't want to completely abandon ship and start over again. But if you can't get the ball to DK Metcalf, if your strategies for doing so, we talked last week about how the X's and O's look good on the board with the screen pass they threw to DK Metcalf and the guard comes out to block the guy who's in position to make the tackle, but the guard's 320 pounds and the O can't get to the X.
Right.
On the board, the O gets to the X.
Right.
In practice, the O doesn't get to the X. But this is what happens, Chris, when you have an offense that is unimaginative and all of a sudden we're going to cook up all these ways to get the football to DK Metcalf. You have to have some understanding of the difference between drawing the play up and having the play actually be executed. And if you haven't baked that into your overall offensive approach, that's part of the growing pains. And it could be that maybe after week one they decided, well, I don't know, maybe we're getting a little too creative here. Maybe we're getting a little too far ahead of ourselves. I don't know where they go next with this offense, but they've got guys they're paying a lot of money. And at some point, you've either got to use them or you got to ask yourself, why the hell do we pay them all this money?
That's the point. I mean, that, we've had these conversations in the past. You want to start to evaluate a team? What's the first thing we do a lot of the times? We look at it and go, wait, all right, so wait, who's being paid here? Are they performing? And right now, yeah, they're leaving money on the table. They're just, that is. It makes no sense. You know, they do. They have two big-time players that don't get a chance to really contribute to the team and you know, force their will and scare teams to where now it can open other things up. And that's something they certainly got to figure out and try to fix there in Seattle. Because, again, I don't think – this is not 8 years ago anymore. It's over. They got to start pushing the ball down the field, being a little more creative on the offensive side of the ball. You know, their defense is not going to be dominant in holding everybody to 10 points and 7 points. It's just not there anymore. So they got to help them out a little bit too here and help Geno Smith out. So we'll see where it goes. But, like, I'm reluctant, you know, as we sit here and talk about it. I don't know. Are they capable of doing that? I'm not really sure if they are.
I remember back when the Cardinals had Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin, and they were using both of them to a very high degree, and it was working. And I remember the Cardinals eventually said, well, we can't pay 2 receivers. Nobody pays 2 receivers.
Right.
You got a salary cap to manage. You can't pay 2 receivers in this league. So now teams are paying 2 receivers. But if you have 2 receivers and are using them, why are you paying 2 receivers? The whole thing is bizarre to me. And again, these are decisions that people are making in real time, balancing a bunch of different factors. And I just think in hindsight, they may have made a mistake here, especially if they're not going to. Yeah, I'm still waiting for DK Metcalf to line up in the backfield like Deebo Samuel.
Yeah,
Why don't you do that?
Yeah.
That's a way to give him the football. Like you said, he's got muscles popping out of his ears. Let him run between the tackles. Good luck tackling DK Metcalf,
right?
Anybody who tries to get in his way. So, and what's fascinating about this too, Chris, and this is what I love about football season, once you get into it, and there's always a new train coming down the tracks heading right for you just 6 days away or 4 days away or 5 days away, whatever the case may be, there isn't a whole lot of time to go back and regroup and revisit because you got to get ready for the next game.
Right.
Whatever changes you're going to make, you don't have time to dawdle. You don't have time to plan. You've got a lot of stuff to do from 1 week to the next. So it's fascinating to me which teams are really capable of addressing their issues and getting better, because there just isn't the luxury of time that you have in the offseason when you're really carefully planning what you're going to do for the year.
No, and you know, we got Atlanta this week. The spotlight will be on the offense this week. I don't think we're ready to write home and say that Atlanta is one of the top five defenses in football. They're going to be expected to move the ball in that group. We'll see if they can. This will be a real test, and I think, you know, a little bit of a look into the future of what the offense maybe is capable of. Hopefully they do open it up and give Geno, you know, some chances. There's nothing physically that Geno can't do as far as throwing the football. You know, we've seen that, and I hope everybody saw that in week one. He's got a very strong arm. He can push the ball down the field with ease to guys like Tyler Lockett. We saw it a little last year, too. You know, they got to stop micromanaging quarterbacks so much. That's their biggest problem in Seattle, to me, in a lot of ways. Just they got to find some ways to get them in a rhythm, be a little more creative, find some more explosive plays, and they don't seem to have a feel or a knack for that by any stretch of the imagination.
By the way, quarterback Geno Smith, in the aftermath of that week one win over the Broncos, when he said on multiple occasions, "They wrote me off, but I ain't right back," he has filed for trademark protection of that phrase and plans to put it on merchandise. Now, it's kind of a long phrase, so you're going to need space. Because even actually added, though, "They wrote me off, but I ain't right back, though." So it's not something that's going to fit in neat and tidy fashion on a variety of merchandise. And frankly, if he doesn't start playing better, nobody's going to buy it. I don't know if you're ever going to use it. It's not going to work. The catchphrase fails if you're 1-7. When you're 1-0, that's your time to sell the gear. When you're 1-1, 1-2, 1-3, and benched, the window is closed on selling the "I ain't right back, though" merchandise, Chris.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It is a great saying, though. It really is. It's one that I had never heard before, so I don't know. Maybe it has a future just is in general, even without Geno Smith's name attached to it, and that's why he did it, but it was a great saying.
Some sayings have never been heard before for a reason.
Well, I feel like take away "though," it's actually better. "They wrote me off, but I ain't right back." But, you know, or "I didn't write back." It works. You know, I don't know. And
it's funny, too, because he said it enough times after that game that it made me think he's really workshopped it and practiced it, and he's been waiting to use it, and he's very happy with it. It may not be his best work. But we'll see. Maybe I'll have another catchphrase the next time they win a football game. We'll stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for more from the Cardinals. I'm not throwing a break here. I'm just making a clunky segue.
Yeah, gotcha.
They have gotten to 1-1 after looking horrible in the season opener and then turning it around, erasing the 20-point deficit. Kyler Murray, by the way, the first quarterback ever to have a rushing touchdown, a passing touchdown, a passing two-point conversion, and a rushing two-point conversion in the same game, for those of you who are fascinated by very obscure records. Here's Cliff Kingsbury on what Kyler did in that second half when he absolutely took over the game against the Las Vegas Raiders.
I'd love to see it from the start every week. You know, I think that's the ability and the talent that he has, and I got to do a better job getting our offense to a quicker start. There's no doubt, but we've seen him do that before, and he can make it go when he wants to.
Yeah. So where was it week one? That's the thing. He can make it happen. He can take a game over. We got to let him take a game over. There he is running a touchdown that got the game within two, and then he threw that pass that threaded the needle. It was almost batted down when they went up. Or when they forced overtime, there it is. There you see the Raiders player who almost gets a hand on it to force overtime. I mean, it was an incredible performance by Kyler Murray. You just got to let him do his thing, and don't get in the way of great players. Just let great players go out there and be great, Chris.
Mike, I think you're spot on here. You know, this is a game I watched pretty closely yesterday on film too, and got a pretty good feel. Like, hey, we'd all love Kyler Murray to do that and do it. They got to help him do that. You know, the start of the game, a little bit like we've talked about with the other quarterbacks, they try to play a style of also like, oh, hey, this week we're going to come out and run the ball and we're going to put two tight ends on the field. Like, that crap's over. I used to say, hey, they need more versatility. They're not capable of more versatility. Open the freaking field up. You're made to have a spread field.
throw the ball, have 9 million screens, have 9 million short passes. Their passing game's not that creative, so find just those ways to help out the rest of the passing game. Quarterback draws, quarterback design run plays, that's where the game changed. They tried to play this way of like, we're going to be balanced and do crap like that early on in the football game. And they never got in a rhythm. When they opened it up and just said, hey, just throw it to this guy. Here's a screen. Here's a wide receiver screen. Quarterback draw. Option down the side. You know, he can pitch it. He can fake pitch it. Run. If you're going to pay this guy all this damn money, start using him the way he's supposed to be used. That's the, to me, it is on them. I think you're spot on here. You know, and then he can start to get in rhythm like we talk about and now start to make people miss when he scrambles and does this. He had some of the damnedest plays you'll ever see in your life in that football game. I mean, he had plays where you go, he was tackled 7 times in that play and yet no one tackled him and he got away and ran for the 2-point conversion or ran for a touchdown. It's unreal. But I think you're spot on there. They gotta. This is who they are, and they have these moments during these games where they try to be something else than what they are, and they're not capable. They're not a block down, pull the guard, and you know, smash mouth football. When they do that, they don't even look right. They're not made for it. They don't know how to coach it. They're better off when they got 4 receivers to the right and 1 guy to the left, and just play crazy Texas Tech football. That's what you're built to do. Do it. And I think sometimes they do. They handicap Murray by, you know, what you're saying. They just don't let it fly that way. And to me, that's when they're most dangerous. And like we've talked about with these other teams and how they're built and where the money's spent. This is how they're built. This is where the money's spent. So let it go. Stop trying to pretend you're something else than what you are.
Speaking of spent, he was spent after that 2-point conversion. 20.8 seconds.
That's insane.
It took 84.9 yards covered by Kyler Murray, and he made it look so easy and calm. It's got to be so frustrating. You just can't catch him. You can't track him down. And, yeah, let him do his thing. I wonder if they're trying to evolve him into something other than what he is. Are they trying to protect him from injury like the ankle problem last year that caused him to miss several games, and then he really wasn't the same the rest of the season? I just think you have to accept who he is, what he does, and maximize it. Isn't that what good coaching is? Identifying your best players, what makes them your best players, and coming up with ways to get the most out of the skill sets of your most skilled player.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it.
Exactly.
That's
right.
The magic.
And
that's the secret.
Yes. I agreed. Agreed. You know, you got to play to that. That's what you are there. And you know, when you talk to, you know, coaches or people around the league, and you talk about the Cardinals, that's what scares them. Whoa, the weapons and speed they have. And then, wait, we want to play coverage, but wait, we have to worry about, you know, Kyler and the spread and the quarterback design run and stuff. So wait, we can't play coverage because we got to worry about that and bring a safety down. And that's where they can put you in a bind. You know, they want to play fast. They want to do some of that no huddle stuff. Okay, well, find some creative ways to do that. The game changed in the third quarter a little bit when, you know, he hit a deep cross finally, spread out the field. Then all of a sudden it was a screen and the Kyler option and the pitch option and another design run. And that's when I'm sitting here looking at my notes right now, if you wonder why I'm looking down, because I go, this is who they are. You know, screw this other stuff here. But that's when the game changed completely. And that's when the Raiders had to stop playing too deep because they started to go, whoa, whoa. Quarterback draw, pitch option, wait, we can't just play sit too deep and do all this now. We don't have enough people to stop those type of football plays. And that's when they got the Raiders going, whoa, whoa, which way do they go? Which way do they do? There's 4 receivers here and 1 guy here, and they got it all going, and that's when they gained control of the football game. And I think they just got to stop pretending and let the game play that way and just, you know, play with your hair on fire. That's when they're at their best.
Let's go ahead and take a break before we get to the point where our hair is on fire as it relates to how much time we have left in the show. When we return, Stephon Diggs, coming off of a great night against the Tennessee Titans, spoke with me yesterday. We'll play a little bit of the conversation and talk more about the best team in football right now, the Buffalo Bills, when PFT Live, presented by Google Pixel, continues right after this.